Big injury news in the AFC East wild card matchup this weekend. And we're not going to leave that division because we've got a big report coming from the New York Jets being brought to you by our very own Tony Pauline, who's going to join us shortly. And we're going to get into all the wild card matchups. There's already been a few coach firings, some GM rumblings, some assistant coach, moving on. We're going to get to all that. And of course, doing that with me, none other than Trey Wingo, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst. Trey, how are you doing, my friend?
Mahalo, Brett. Doing well. Hope things are well with you. This is always one of the more interesting times of the entire year for me in the NFL because obviously everyone's gearing up for the playoffs and the postseason run to the Super Bowl, yet there's so many things that happen for the teams, for the most part, that didn't make it into the postseason and massive changes. And weirdly, there are always one or two situations where teams that are in the postseason make some really strange moves and changes. So this is literally the sweet spot where the confluence of what we want to see on the field and all the stuff that fuels us in the offseason until they get back on the field sort of come together at once. It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. It's that perfect mesh of the offseason and the season is still happening because we still have games. And we've got some great games to talk about coming up. One of the games that could have been really good was the Bills-Dolphins meeting for a third time this season in the AFC wildcard. But that game has taken a little bit of a dampening given the news that came out today that Tua Tagovailoa has been ruled out for that wild card matchup. Not a lot of people were giving them a chance to begin with, Trey, but got to figure it's going to be tough sledding for them this weekend.
Listen, it's massive. And just so people understand how much that moved the line at Caesar Sports, I think the Bills started as a 9-point favorite. Yeah. Now they're 13. They're a 13-point favorite against a Miami team that they split with, by the way, in the regular season. And the Dolphins actually played very well in that snow-cold game late in the season up in Buffalo. But, Skylar Thompson is going to be starting for the Buffalo Bills against Josh Allen, who has, Davis and Diggs and Dawson Knox and even Cole Beasley and everybody else now to throw to, and John Brown, who we saw come back and have a real effect. It's going to be tough sledding for Miami. We'll get into the game a little bit later when we break down wildcard weekend. But this was the right call. I don't know how anybody who wants to be an accredited medical professional would say, I'm going to sign off on Tua after a third concussion. And I know that technically according to the stats that are kept, he's only had two concussions this season. But the second concussion was because they messed up the first one in the game against Buffalo. And they realized how bad they messed it up that they changed the concussion protocols. When someone that acts like Tua in that game is out and goes directly into concussion protocol, which they should have done before the Thursday night disaster where he got laid out in Cincinnati. Yep. So, Tua... Look, I know it's crushing for the Dolphins because they have a much better chance to win if Tua is in there. But if you want Tua to be your quarterback at all going forward, you need to say to him, chill. You just do everything you need to do to get ready for next season because we need you at your absolute best because with you as our starting quarterback, we can threaten the Buffalo Bills for dominance in the AFC East with everything Mike McDaniel has put on that team. So the short term sucks for the Dolphins, but not only for the team, but for Tua as a human being. You have to think about the long term ramifications. I am not surprised by this at all. And, I've heard from a few Dolphin fans, and I get this. They say, well, what about Kenny Pickett? Kenny Pickett had two concussions within a 30-day stretch. The real difference between these two is the perception. And I said, yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
and there's no getting around that. We don't want to see what we saw from Tua in that Thursday night game in Cincinnati. And especially in light of what we had to deal with just over a week ago, the DeMar Hamlin situation, which, by the way, great news. He was released from the hospital today. Yeah. So not only did he get back to Buffalo, he went back to Buffalo for another hospital just to make sure everything was good. And they've released him. So the news continues to be great for DeMar Hamlin. But when you have that on top of what we saw with Tua earlier in the season, and yet he's in his second/third concussion within 3 months, there's no way he's going out on the field. I'm sorry. There's just no way.
Yeah, and it's funny because everything is basically going wrong for the Dolphins, right, trending in that direction. Tua's out, and the overall human aspect of DeMar Hamlin being released means he's going to be in that stadium. That emotional lift to that Buffalo Bills team and to Bills Mafia. You had said last week astutely that home field advantage is losing its significance year by year, but not in Buffalo. And no. To add that that emotional element is a big deal. And the Dolphins not having Tua, it's good for Tua. It doesn't feel good for him right now. We were talking about this off the air, just about another player, right? Keeping guys healthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not good for the Dolphins. It's good for Tua, which could be good for the Dolphins in the long run. And the last point I'd love to make is this, kind of what you said, is Mike McDaniel said it too in his press conference today. They said, hey, you know, do you think Tua could play next week? And he said, guys, this is about Tua and the benefit and the health of his human life, not about him as a quarterback right now. We got to make sure he's a healthy human before we make sure he's a healthy quarterback. I think that's the right take.
Absolutely. And by the way, along those lines, I've got some great, interesting notes about home field advantage and some teams that come into playoffs hot. That might surprise you when we get to the breakdowns a little bit later. But I think this is the right call for everybody involved. And we just, if the Dolphins somehow find a way to beat the Bills, great for them. Don't expect two in the divisional round. I think that's the thing you have to think about. Just don't expect it. If there's some way it's clear, great. But do not expect that if Miami can get past Buffalo.
Would be the biggest upset in wild card history. Based on that 13-point spread. Okay. Well, look, let's stay in the AFC East because we're going to get the band back together here in a second when we bring in our good buddy Tony Pauline, who I can't wait to spend more time with once the Super Bowl is over as we get closer to the draft. But Tony just got some really good scoops on the sudden news that came out just an hour or so ago that Mike LaFleur, offensive coordinator for the New York Jets, and the New York Jets officially have mutually agreed to part ways. But we've been able to find out that kind of what led to that decision, what led to that coming down today. Let's get Tony in here and see if we can break this down a little bit. Tony, first of all, welcome to Football Insiders, my friend. Welcome back.
Hey, good to be back with the dynamic duo. Happy New Year to everyone. To Trey, mela kaliki maka. As you're out
mahalo there, my friend. Absolutely.
Like you said, I mean the season never ends. It just keeps winding up, and whether it's the playoffs this weekend or the Jets making news today, what people thought was inevitable, it was an interesting take for people told me as to what went down in Florham Park for the Jets.
Well, let's take a look at that. And for everybody who is watching, Tony's going to be with us pretty much every week once the Super Bowl is over, when we switch over to Draft Insiders and we get close to the NFL draft. So get used to these Tony bombs. But Tony, I think we both know Mike McDaniel and Rob Saleh and that whole crew that they run with, the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree and so on. They're close. Right. What happened that Mike is parting ways from his good buddy Rob Saleh?
Yeah, a good buddy, best friend. I mean, that's what it is. I was told that there was a disconnect in the Jets front office, which, is not unusual. Basically, the front office disconnect between the front office and Robert Saleh. The front office, a la Joe Douglas, wanted Mike LaFleur gone for a couple of reasons. Felt that Zach Wilson's inability to develop, Zach Wilson's failures were the fault of Mike LaFleur. Robert Saleh wanted his best friend to stay, wanted to give him another year. Now, the feeling in the Jets front office is Robert Saleh can basically work with any defensive player. He can take any defensive player and put it in his system and then mold the system to get the most from that defensive player. And Saleh proved that because he got a lot of production from very ordinary players this year. Everybody talked about, Sauce Gardner, everybody talked about Quinnen Williams, who were very productive. But there were some very average players who also played well. It's a contradiction or contrary to that with Mike LaFleur's system. LaFleur needs specific players for his system. He needs a type of player to make his system work. He needs zone blocking linemen. Anything other than a pure zone blocking lineman, his offensive system isn't going to work. He needs sharp route runners at the receiver position. Any guy that can't come in and run scissor sharp routes is not going to fit in the system. And because of that, there's a very small margin of error. And what they want is they want to get a Robert Saleh type of defensive coordinator to run that offense. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense when you look at the personnel. I mean, you look at the success that they have had with Elijah Vera Tucker, the offensive lineman from USC, who they traded up to get in the 2021 draft. When he's healthy, he's been terrific at both guard and left tackle. Then you look at Mekhi Becton, who, you know, after a real good rookie season, has been a disaster, even though he was injured this year. And the offensive coaches were ready to get rid of him in the middle of 2021 when he had that injury and he wasn't rehab. You even look at Denzel Mims. You talk to people around the league, and they feel that the Jets are basically wasting Denzel Mims, who is a productive receiver, who has got a lot of talent, but is not a good fit for the LaFleur system. So I think when they said it was mutually parting ways, probably a situation where Sala said, listen,
it's never mutually parting ways.
But I don't think Sala wanted to fire LaFleur as his best friend. They figured, listen, it's not going to get any better. So LaFleur, you know, left, mutually parted, whatever, fired. What could you do? I mean, the last three games, the Jets offense did not score a touchdown with four different quarterbacks.
Yeah. That all that is true, and it makes sense. And if the system was dependent on certain players, then the system is terrible, right? I mean, like, you want to get players, because the essence of coaching is, what do your players do best? Let's put them in positions to succeed. I mean, that's the essence of coaching, not the other way around. Here's what I do. You guys figure it out. I understand that. But this is a tale as old as time. Who drafted Zach Wilson? Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas is pinning his hopes on Zach Wilson as the number two overall pick of the 2021 draft. I mean, that's how this is. If Joe Douglas didn't draft Zach Wilson, I don't think any of this goes down the way it does, because Joe Douglas is tied to Zach Wilson finally being the quarterback that doesn't screw it up for the Jets like everybody else that they've tried over the last years since Ken O'Brien, or even Chad Pennington. Yeah, we had a couple of glory years with Mark Sanchez, but you get what I'm saying here.
Sure.
You're right. The Jets offense down the stretch didn't score a lot of points, but they showed signs of life with every other quarterback. Fake Tim Tebow, Chris Streveler, I think that was his name, right? Fake Tim Tebow moved the ball pretty well. 74-year-old Joe Flacco threw touchdown passes all over the place. And Mike White, a quarterback nobody wanted in the draft, has looked really good at times. This is about Joe Douglas as much as anything else of what you just said, and it's all true. In my read, this is as much about Joe Douglas saying, damn it, I picked this guy number two. We got to find a way to make it work.
Tony, and
to your point, you know, to your point, when you think that it's LaFleur's problem or LaFleur's point, a fault that Zach Douglas has not developed, you get Shreveler coming in, and all of a sudden the offense perks up and they move the ball. You get Joe Flacco, who, you know, is a week away from collecting Social Security checks, and he's able to do some decent things. You get Mike White comes in, and people say, wow, this guy should have been our starter from day one, which makes you think, well, the problem isn't the offense. He's got to make you think it's not the offensive coordinator, it's the quarterback, Zach Wilson. You know, it is interesting. Towards the end of the season, LaFleur said of Zach Wilson, he said he made a mistake, and one regret that he had was he didn't have a veteran quarterback to start in 2021 while Zach Wilson was able to sit on the bench and just observe. If you go back to October of 2029, there's an article on Pro Football Weekly, which I had wrote about the state of the Jets. And what I had said was in October 29, 2021 was people in the league told me it was criminal. That's the word they use, criminal, that the Jets did not have an established veteran on the roster when camp opened in July of 2021 to mentor Zach Wilson. Well, and to your point, Trey, who should have brought that veteran quarterback in to have on the roster to help mentor Zach Wilson?
Joe Douglas. Exactly right. And the other part about this, and I want to be clear, I don't think Zach Wilson is a bust. I think Zach Wilson needs to grow up. Yeah. Like I don't think any of this has anything to do with his ability as a quarterback. He can make every throw. He can do all of that. Yeah. You know, Geno Smith is 10 years into his NFL career now, and he's playing better than he ever had. Well, when he was a Jets quarterback, it was so bad that one of his teammates broke his jaw by punching him in the face.
That ended his Jets career.
IK Empanala, wasn't that his name?
That's IK right. Empanala. Who then went to the Bills.
Yeah. So anyway, the point here is that Zach just needs a reboot. And I don't know if that's ever going to be where it's going to work in New York. Like Zach, and I've said this before, Zach grew up in a very small town in an isolated place in Utah, and then went all the way to BYU for his college experience. Okay. Let's just say the BYU college experience might be slightly more limited than the worldview you'll find as the quarterback for the New York Jets. Okay. In New York frickin' city. All right. To me, all of Zach's issues have to do with how he relates to people, how he relates to teammates. Does he understand the job? One of the reasons Carson Wentz is about to be on his fourth team in 4 years, in my opinion, is because when he was in Indianapolis, they said, hey, we'd like you to come in on your off day and help with the quarterback room. And he was like, yeah, it's the day I go hunting. Wrong answer. You don't understand the job. Like when Zach was asked about, do you owe the apology to the defense? He said, no. Right.
No.
Yeah. You don't understand the job. Even this.
It's a new job. That's a new segment on this show moving forward, by the way.
Right. You don't understand the gig. Even the last thing he said after the season, when they said, whoever they bring in, I'm going to make his life a living hell in practice.
Right.
You still don't get the job. You know, you don't understand. Okay. Yeah. The answer should have been, hey man, whoever they bring in, awesome. I look forward to the competition. Iron sharpens iron, steel fires steel. We're going to all make this together. He still doesn't get the gig. So yeah. To me, the problems with Zach are here to here, not here down through the rest of his body.
Here's the thing is you know, everybody talks about that press conference after the Patriot game. You go back to his rookie year, in the press conferences after the losses, he was not taking responsibility. And people in the league were saying, you know, this guy's got to learn. He is the quarterback. He is the man. Yeah. He is the face of the franchise. So, you know, it was not this. The Patriot post-game press conference was nothing new. It was just a continuation of what went on his rookie year. And you would have thought that his manager, his agent or somebody would have pulled him aside and said, hey, listen, you know, you're the number two pick. You're the quarterback. You're the guy that has to lead the franchise. And you're right about Joe Douglas. The fact is this. When Douglas came to the Jets in 2019, he has done some good things. He's done a great job with the defensive line. He's done a terrific job with the running backs. He's rebuilt the tight end position. He's done a good job with the linebackers. The offensive line and the quarterback position has been his Achilles heel. When he came here in 2019.
That's strange, though, because Joe Douglas is a former offensive lineman, right? That was actually supposed to be like his calling card when he got to the Jets.
Part of that problem could be that he thinks he's going to sneak by with these bargains in free agency, or he's going to get a guy later on in the draft and turn him into a starter, and it hasn't worked out. The offensive line is as bad now, if not worse than it was in 2019. Everybody's talking about the Jets in the offseason. What's the situation of quarterback? The New York Jets literally need three starting offensive linemen for next season, if not three and a half, because Laken Tomlinson really didn't play inspired football this year, and you got to hope that Vera Tucker comes back. So while everyone's talking about the quarterback position, they're also going to need three to four offensive linemen, at least three starting offensive linemen.
I love that you said that, because we all get enamored with quarterbacks, but if you can't protect them and they don't know what they're doing up front, nothing's going to work.
But Trey, like, this goes back to what you said earlier this season and what you were saying now, and both of you. I mean, this really does – we should be talking about the offensive line, but this is about Zach Wilson, right? This decision is about Zach Wilson. And, Trey, earlier this year, you – and I think you took some criticism and then it proved out to be correct – said Joe Flacco.
Did I? I don't listen.
Joe Flacco should be starting for the Jets. Tony, you said it's criminal. The league source said it was criminal that the Jets did not have a veteran quarterback for Zach to learn from at the open of camp, nor did they sit him behind Joe Flacco when they did get him to develop. And that doesn't look like it's going to change it. It looks like this decision was made so that the guy can come in and Zach Wilson is just going to be handed the job again. Is that going to solve anything?
Well, I don't think Zach Wilson's going to be handed the job. And you have to remember, before they traded Sam Darnold, they gave up on Sam Darnold and then drafted Zach Wilson. So if you're looking at it from the lens of the New York Jets or a New York Jets fan or a New York Jets critic, this is just a continuation. They've gone from Sam Darnold, who everyone thought was going to be their franchise quarterback, who, you know, showed a lot of promise as a rookie, then fell flat under Adam Gase, to Zach Wilson, who may have shown promise in less than a handful of games, who has fallen flat on their face. So it's just a continuation of the disaster at the quarterback position for the New York Jets season after season, year after year, literally decade after decade.
Yeah. As a friend of mine who's a Jets fan says, whoever they pick, I'm always assuming it's the wrong quarterback.
I did a podcast with Brian Costello of the New York Post last year before the draft, and he asked me about Zach Wilson. I said, well, if you're a Jets fan, you have to hope for the best but expect the worst. I mean, that's what it is. And that's
the team slogan.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. And we should move on from the Jets because we have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah. So, hey, and by the way, Trey, you know it's getting close to draft insider season when Tony's saying Sam Darnold. And he's
Sam Darnold. And Mekhi Becton. Mekhi Becton,
baby.
There you go, baby.
Tony, not only am I excited to see more of you as we get closer to the draft, I'm excited for our audience to be able to check you out towards the end of January when you'll be doing wall-to-wall coverage of the Shrine Game on location in Las Vegas, where the we were the first to have it. The New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons coaching staffs this morning announced to be coaching in that game. So excited to see what you bring from the live Shrine Bowl coverage down in Vegas later this month. And then right after that, Draft Insiders and the band's back together. So can't wait to see you, Tony. Appreciate you.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Trey, let's stay with this idea here because we were going to lead off the show with talking about the other coaches who had been fired. Yeah. We lost Cliff. We lost as if we're doing a memorial service here. But Cliff Kingsbury ultimately was let go by the Arizona Cardinals. Steve Keim has opted to step away for health purposes. So they're going through a complete change. Lovie Smith.
By the way, both of those guys got 5-year extensions this offseason.
10 months ago, right? Not even a year ago.
5-year extensions. Yeah. So just factor that into the whole Arizona equation.
Well, I want to talk about the other coach in Lovie Smith, who was a surprise out of the blue last 11th hour candidate for the Houston Texans, largely seen as a stopgap coach. And that's what he proved to be in the eyes of Nick Caserio and the rest of that front office. He's one and done in Texas. Let's start there. What are your thoughts about Lovie Smith being let go and the job he did this year? And, you know, where do they go from there?
Well, they never wanted Lovie Smith as their head coach to begin with. Just be honest about it, right? Well, they were going to go another way after David Culley was a one and done in Houston, which, by the way, he was one and done when they had a franchise quarterback in Deshaun Watson, who was basically the team said, we're not going to play you because you don't want to be here. We're not going to play you. So David Culley was handed a piece of crap and said, go make a golden throne out of this rusty iron. Okay. Yeah. And that didn't work. So he was one and done. So then they were going to go another way. And one of the names that had been serviced was Josh McCown, I love Josh McCown. He may eventually be a good head coach. Hell, they may go down that road again now. But the optics were terrible. And they realized, yeah, we probably can't do that. So at the last second, hey, Lovey, how'd you like to be head coach? I mean, I remember he was asked at his press conference, when did you know you were a candidate? He said, I really don't know.
Yes.
So the Texans are a joke. Like, they're a joke. And yeah. Nick Caserio, it's up to you, buddy. Because you got to fix this. Because if we were playing English Premier League rules, the Texans would have been relegated years ago. Okay,
yeah.
Let's bring up Wrexham, and and shove whatever's left of the McNair estate and the Texans into places where we don't have to talk about them anymore. Look, they didn't win a bunch of games. I totally understand that, but they were in almost every game.
Yeah, right. They were very competitive.
They were not very good, but they were very good at trying really hard. Okay. Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's the best way I can sum up the job Lovie Smith got. The quarterback situation really wasn't any better than what David Culley got. And we got to find a way to make it work. You know, they were down massive to the Dolphins, made that a one score game at the end.
Yep.
They took the Chiefs to overtime before they melted, as everyone expected they were going to do. They were in the Cowboys, you know, Cowboys needed to score on the last play of the game or with like 13 seconds left to find a way to beat the hapless Houston Texans. They were in almost every game.
Yeah.
So like, that's the definition of coaching. Get the best out of your players. His players aren't very good. Like, that's the problem with the Texans. The players aren't very good. And the one most important player is the quarterback, and they haven't had a good one since 2020.
Yeah.
All the other issues with Deshaun Watson aside, I understand all of that, but I'm just talking about the play on the field. And by the way, the Cleveland Browns should be a little concerned about the play on the field.
I was going to say.
We can get into that as well. Congratulations on that contract and what you're getting so far back.
Yeah.
But the Texans are talent deficient.
Yeah.
Okay. The biggest problem for the Texans wasn't their coaching staff. It's their talent deficiencies, specifically at the quarterback position. So whoever is going to be the head coach of the Texans, a new coach for a third straight year, fourth straight year, actually, right? Because
it was
Bill O'Brien, then David Culley, then Lovie Smith, and now whoever they're going to bring in. So a new head coach, four coaches in 4 years. Let that ruminate. Let me just put that in perspective for you, okay? The Texans are about to go through their fourth coach in 4 years. The Pittsburgh Steelers have had three coaches since 1970.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
more Lombardis too, I think, as well.
Yeah. It's not a Lovie Smith problem in Houston. It's a Houston problem in Houston.
Yes.
And they better figure it the F out.
Great point.
Okay. I mean, come on. They're a joke. By the way, my favorite stat of all time since I mentioned that, since 1970, Pope's 5, Steelers coaches 3.
Wow. I tell you what, I didn't know that. That's good.
Popes. 3 Steelers head coaches.
The Vatican doesn't lose a whole hell of a lot of time. But hey,
That's a whole separate discussion we could have.
That's a good point. Wow. That took a left turn there. So look, to your point, the Houston, the problem in Houston is Houston, and that's going to make filling that position with a guy with the ilk of Jim Harbaugh or Sean Payton probably not likely, right? Why would they want to go there and deal with the dysfunction? Or do you see that as a possibility for them?
Oh, by the way, I'm just looking this up. It was a split. Bill O'Brien got fired in the season. So Romeo Crennel also took over. Five coaches in 4 years.
Yeah. Nice.
Way to go, Texas.
Right up there with the Vatican.
Solid. Great job. Oh, my God. That's a nightmare. I'd forgotten that Bill O'Brien got fired in the season and Romeo Crennel took over for the final 12 games. What a nightmare. All right, sorry, what was the question you asked again? I was just laughing at the Houston ineptitude.
Wrapping that ineptitude into the question is, if you're Sean Payton or Jim Harbaugh and you're two of the more coveted coaches this coaching cycle, is that a job you're seriously going to consider?
No. Sean Payton said it on the Fox set. What matters most to you? Ownership. Mm. Well, the ownership for the Texans is awful, right?
Yeah.
It's awful. Cal McNair is now basically just inherited his dad's billions in business. Finally, they got Jack Easterby out of there. I had no idea what the hell he ever did for the Houston Texans. It's kind of like that Ernie McAdams, when Art Modell said, "Can someone explain to me what Ernie McAdams does for the Cleveland Browns?" When Bill Belichick was the head coach, nobody knew. Well, what did Jack Easterby do? Not sure, but he said God bless a lot. So
yeah, there you go.
Why would Sean, with all the options open to Sean Payton, A, stay in TV, make a lot of money, and have a cushy job. B, potentially figure out Russell Wilson in Denver. C, Sean McVay may be leaving the Rams. And who knows if Brandon Staley's coming back. All of those options are better than taking over the Houston Texans, who are talent deficient. And they're going to get a quarterback in this draft. But as we've shown from the Jets, it's not just about drafting a quarterback high. It's drafting the right quarterback.
The right one. Yep.
Absolutely. You got to draft the right one. Okay. Mitchell Trubisky was taken ahead of Patrick Mahomes. That's just, these things are truisms. So it's great to have a high draft pick and use it on a quarterback if you get the right one. Otherwise, you're in the spin cycle that we find the Jets in every other season.
Mitchell Trubisky was traded up for over Patrick Mahomes. Let's put that up there too.
To be fair, the Chiefs traded up 17 spots. By the way, with Houston, if I'm not mistaken, to get that pick.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, it was Houston.
Deshaun Watson. Oh, wait. That didn't turn out well. So let's talk about the other immediate coach firing, and that is Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. We both feel pretty strongly that he probably wasn't the right selection from the beginning to have this job. So I'm going to ask you this, but this was pretty much inevitable, right? This firing?
Yeah. Look, everybody freaked out when my guy Jeff Saturday got the interim coaching job for the Colts. Oh, it's so disrespectful, said Bill Cowher to the coaching organization. And Joe Thomas, whom I love, said this is a sham and a fraud for every current coach in the NFL. Where was your adjutant when that dude was hired? Okay. At least Jeff played in the NFL and had a career and knew what it was like to win a championship. Like, good looking bearded dude was a loser at Texas Tech.
Good looking bearded dude.
I mean,
who's the quarterback there? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, yeah. Hard to lose with that guy.
Might have helped. So, I mean, like, that guy had a losing record at Texas Tech with future Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback, was going to be the offensive coordinator at USC, and suddenly was, and I'm going to say the word gifted. He didn't earn it. He was gifted a head coaching job in the NFL. So if you're all upset about Jeff Saturday, I get it. But one thing you know about me, I'm not into selective outrage. If something bothers you there, it should bother you there. Like, if you're all up in arms about the Patriots, oh, they always cheat. Were you upset when the Browns were illegally texting? Were you upset when the Falcons were illegally pumping in crowd noise? Like, were you upset when the Broncos won 2 Super Bowls by manipulating the salary cap and the roster by putting a bunch of people on the practice squad and IR illegally? Like, were you okay with that? Because you can't just pick and choose, right? So if you're freaking out about Jeff Saturday, why weren't you freaking out about Cliff Kingsbury? And the only reason Kyler Murray is the quarterback in Arizona is because Cliff Kingsbury had wanted to date him forever. He tried to get him twice to come to Texas Tech. Okay. So now
you are on fire tonight.
But I mean, just think about the insanity of all of this. Okay. Only reason Kyler Murray was the number one overall pick because Cliff Kingsbury fell in love with the player. So you made Cliff the captain, grand poobah, master of time, space, and dimension for the Arizona Cardinals. You then gave him a 5-year contract extension along with GM Steve Keim. Then the two of you, by the way, kudos to Eric Burkhardt, Kyler Murray's agent. He might have known the bleep show was coming down. He got that deal done this offseason. So now you have Kyler with a massive contract. You're paying Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim their massive contracts and 5-year extensions. And they are the reason that Kyler Murray is there and got that contract extension. And now they're gone. And who knows if anybody thinks that Kyler Murray is going to be a starting franchise quarterback in the NFL now. Like, what head coach is going to come in and look at his body of work and say, we have our dude?
Yeah.
It's a mess. It is a mess in Arizona, and they are burning cash for this mess.
It is a, we went from one inept franchise, to another. The Cardinals also another franchise that historically has been a disaster, except for the golden years of our friend Kurt Warner, who hooked them up. But the thing that sticks out to me about this is, and by the way, Cliff Kingsbury, are you sure he liked Kyler Murray? Because there's a video, I think it might be a hostage video, of him swearing to us, quote, Josh Rosen is our guy.
Those are like, well, remember when the Jets drafted Sam Darnold, their tweet was got our guy. And then 2 years later when they drafted, or 3 years later when they drafted Zach Wilson, guess what they tweeted? Got our guy. No, yeah. You didn't get your guy in either one of those situations. No. You didn't.
So,
and by the way, teams stop doing that.
Yeah.
Stop doing that because it will come back.
Still up on the Cardinals account.
Yeah. It'll still come back to haunt you 1,000 times over. Yeah. Oh. Don't tweet, cringy. Got our guy. Cringy. This is the guy we drafted. We hope it works.
That's
much
it.
Better.
Hoping for the best.
Hoping for the best.
That's it. I want to get, we have Arif Hassan joining us to talk some about these wild card matchups.
Also good looking bearded dude, Arif Hassan.
Yes. If I could grow facial hair, I would, but I can't. And I will just be a non-good looking, non-bearded guy.
Nah.
All right. Before we move on to Arif, I do want to get a quick shout out here to our good friends at Pickett, because we're going to talk about some of these wild card matchups. I have released, or will be releasing, they'll be published over the next couple of days, previews and predictions using my Behavior Bets sports betting model to predict every single playoff game, not just in the wild card round, but I project the winners all the way to the Super Bowl. And I will be personally betting on all of these games over at Caesar Sportsbook. You can track all of my bets, all of the Behavior Bets model selections over at Pickett. My record, by the way, 157, 80, and 6. And I know that because Pickett keeps track of all those stats for me. It also tells me how I do on the money line against the spread, what teams I do the best with, what league I do the best with, what sports book I do the best with, which is Caesars, because it's the only sports book I use. But you can track all of that at Pickett. And the best thing for you guys watching, it's free. It's a free app. Download it for free. Use it for free. You don't have to worry about ads. None of that is happening there. And you can even get a $100 bonus just for signing up with our promo code. Use PFN365 when you sign up and download the app for free. Track your own bets, track my bets, tail me, fade me, whatever you want to do. You can do it all in Pickett. It is the best bet tracking app on the market. Don't take my word for it. Google it right now. Google it. Google best bet tracking app. Tell me what pops up. It'll be Pickett. So promo code PFN365. Enjoy that. Now let's bring in our good friend, bearded good friend, Arif Hassan. Arif, how are you today, my friend? Oh, are you muted?
Well, see, the beard is so heavy, we can't hear him speak. See, that's the problem.
Is he like, muted?
He's, so, he's muted. I'm muted.
Beard
I'm
is, muted. There it is. There we go. There. Yeah. How we
But I feel a lot better hearing all these beard compliments. I still have to trim it a little bit. I think
I want to compare your beard now to the first time you came on the show. It's grown. I don't think it's been this luscious since you were with us.
Yeah, well, the secret is I lost my trimmer. So that's okay. That was the
I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I kept the brush, so it's still
inspiration comes in many forms.
Now, Arif, you I don't know if you know this about Trey, but in about 2 or 3 months, he'll be looking close to where you are. This is just the beginning.
Is that within your profile, Trey? Is that something you can do?
Sporadically. Like I can't go full, you know, there. I get enough where it looks like there's something there that's not completely splotchy. So that's what I
mean.
I
the scruff looks good, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're going Don Johnson 80s vibe.
Don right? Johnson,
Miami Vice.
There you go. There yeah. It is.
You got the right, white shoes?
Let's
pass.
let's get into what promises to be a wild, wild card weekend. The way I'm looking at these games, guys, I think we could see about 80% of these games be decided by one score or less. I think there's a lot of close matchups here. What I'd like to ask you guys first is, what's the most interesting matchup to you? Like, Arif, what matchup wildcard weekend are you most interested in seeing how it plays out?
It's probably the one I at least actually want to watch. I just kind of want to know the results. It's the Giants-Vikings game. It's actually the one I'm going to be at, that's so fair. Of course that's what's going to yeah. happen. But, I mean, these are two teams that have been dogged with accusations, maybe fair, that they're frauds, right? The Giants fell off a little bit at the halfway mark. The Vikings kind of didn't, at least as far as records go. But, you know, there's a lot going on here. I mean, the Giants blitz more than any other team in the NFL. Kirk Cousins' last four games, excluding the Packers game, have been absolutely phenomenal. Some of the best football I've ever seen him play. He finishes the season tied as a record holder for fourth quarter comebacks. Have you ever thought of associating that with Kirk Cousins, right?
No. You like that?
Yeah, it's such an interesting set of storylines, but I also know the game won't be like that fun to watch. I just kind of want to know kind of how it all plays out. So that's interesting to me. But you know, with the news that, you know, Tyler Huntley's not throwing, Lamar Jackson may not play, Tua is not going to be active, some of these other games just don't hold as much interest for me.
Yeah.
And that's a really good backdrop to compare what we saw. Like last year's playoff run might have been the greatest playoff run total in NFL history. Yeah. From the wild card weekend
to the rest of the playoffs.
Yes, outside of the Eagles Bucks game last year, which was just, please God, let this be over. You know, every game was really interesting, and then the division round was crazy. Oh. The championship games were nuts. So This wild card weekend that doesn't have a lot of juice going forward. To your point, the last time the Giants and Vikings played 3 weeks ago, and the Vikings in classic Vikings form needed a 61-yard field goal from Greg Joseph the game. Franchise record. The Giants, the Vikings are really good. They've won 15 straight games as favorites, but the Giants have been really good as underdogs this season. 10-2 against the spread, 6 outright wins as underdogs. They have the formula to just try and run the rock and keep those guys off the field. But one that interests me the most is the rematch of what happened week 3. I think it was. Was it week 3 that long ago? Jacksonville.
Taking on
the Chargers.
Yep.
Because Jacksonville was a 6.5 point underdog when they went into SoFi, and they just pounded the Chargers 38-10. Now, granted, that was the first game after the rib cartilage injury for Justin Herbert. But Jacksonville is a much better team than they were then. And the Chargers are better because they're healthier, right?
Yeah, I would say that with the rib issue, it seems like mostly resolved for Herbert. And I would imagine it's resolved because the line has now moved from Pick'em to Chargers, I think favored by 1.5, maybe a point, depends on the book. I think that I think everyone kind of agrees that rib is healed. We don't know what the status of Mike Williams is, but
I wanted to bring that up because
Bosa's back. That's significant.
Yeah, Bosa and Mac together that's great.
Brandon Staley playing his starters into week 18. Do you guys think that'll come back to bite him this week?
Well, it's not only that he played his starters into week 18, it's he played them and then he decided he didn't want to play them. What was the Brandon Staley plan and why did it change?
Well, and he didn't use his timeouts at the end of a one-score game. Did you want to win or not? I don't understand.
So if you want to win, why are you playing your starters? And if you don't want to win, why did you pull your starters and not use your timeouts? Right?
It's confusing the way that happened.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But, I understand, maybe you want to get them in for a couple of series so they don't, aren't stale or whatever. I would have not put Bosa or Williams or Derwin James just because of his injury history in there. Again, because of all of the injuries, Herbert's taken a lot of hits, maybe not even him. But, I would have put some starters in there, first of all, because there's only so many people you have in your roster. But second, I think it makes sense to have him in for a series or two. But, the way that the Chargers handled it was wild. But, to your point, I think what's really cool about this game is that you've got two quarterbacks that at some point in their careers were completely unsupported by the coaching staff. I think Justin Herbert this year, that offense is not designed for him. And then Trevor Lawrence last year under Urban Meyer. I think it's two quarterbacks that are really excellent at getting the most out of their teams by the parameters that they've been given. And the fact that Doug Peterson seems to be a much better coach, right, than Lombardi or Staley, I think is probably going to be – you don't think so?
No, I do.
Okay,
I thought you were going to say appears to be a much better coach than Urban Meyer. I was going to say appears to be.
Stevie
Wonder can see that.
This Cup is a better NFL head coach than Urban Meyer.
Then I think Brandon Staley or Joe Lombardi, I think that's probably going to be the difference here. But, they've gotten the most out of that offense with Christian Kirk and Zay Jones and Evan Engram all hitting career highs. I think that it's pretty wonderful to see what Trevor Lawrence can do when he's given this kind of support. And on conversely, what happens with Justin Herbert when there's an offense that's actually not a bad offense by its ideas, but it minimizes his strengths. It doesn't let him throw deep nearly as often. It doesn't really encourage him to make some of the tight window throws that he does. It's really it likes to throw short intermediate as opposed to these deep shots when you've got Mike Williams, right?
So I would love to see him in an offense like what Josh Allen is in. I would love to see that kind of thing. Let me ask you guys this. And by the way, I have the Giants winning and the Jaguars winning both of those games. Let me ask you guys this. Those are the games that we find to be probably the most interesting. We also said that because of some injuries, there are games that are probably going to have some obvious outcomes. Which ones are the most obvious to you?
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Trey, on this show, repeatedly.
And San Francisco. Buffalo and San Francisco.
I don't think people really understood or appreciated the depths to which you were stating the difference between the Dolphins defense at home and the Dolphins defense on the road. It is a 30% differential in the points they give up per minute of possession time at home versus the road.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, they played really well the last time up there in the snow.
The offense, the defense gave up 32 points.
Yeah, but they're going to have to – they're going to have to – was it that many points? Really?
32-29 was that final score.
That's rough.
By the way, that's also the score of Super Bowl 38 in Houston, just so you know.
Steel trap. Look at that.
There you go. Well, it's rusty. But the Buffalo Bills have a lot of things going for them. You mentioned, you know, DeMar likely to be there and all that kind of stuff. And Skylar Thompson is going to have to find River Craycraft or whatever his name is. Like, is that the most Gen whatever this is name? Skylar Thompson hits River Craycraft for a second.
Craycraft's been around for a while. I think he was like a 4 or 5 year senior. Was it Washington or Washington State? All I know is that he made me a bunch of money the 1 year that they had college DFS.
Exactly. But the other thing, like just historically, the Dolphins are trying to win their first postseason game in 21 seasons, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be in the 30s. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the record. Here's the record of Dolphins postseason games when kickoff temperature is below 40 degrees. 0-6. In franchise history, they have never won a postseason game when it's below 40 degrees at kickoff. Conversely, the Buffalo Bills have yet to lose a home playoff game or a playoff game in general when it's when it's under 40 degrees. They're 10-0 in franchise history. They've never lost since 1970. They have never lost a playoff game in the cold weather. So a lot of things besides Tua not being there are going against the Miami Dolphins in this
game. Yeah. You brought up the San Francisco 49er game against the Seattle Seahawks.
Let's do that.
The Brock Purdy extravaganza in San Francisco, the five games he's been there, they have scored over 1.5 points per minute of possession time in that five-game stretch, best in the league, better than when Jimmy was there and otherwise. I have this as the biggest point differential in the wild card. I see an 18-point differential between the Seahawks and the 49ers. What do you think about
that? Well, it's funny you mention 18 points.
Ooh, talk to me.
Do you know what the 49ers point differential was in sweeping the division this season in the NFC West? Their average margin of victory was 18.8 points per game. They won and covered every single one of those games. And you mentioned Brock Purdy. This is what I find fascinating.
Yeah.
The 49ers offense has scored more than 30 points in each of their final three games in five of the last six. Because that's very unusual. San Francisco scored fewer than 30 points in each of his last 24 games against Seattle, including the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. The point is Brock Purdy is plug and played in this thing massively. Yeah. San Francisco has been great at home. They're 8-0 straight up, 7-1 against the spread as home favorites this season. They're the 13th team in the Super Bowl era to enter the playoffs on a 10-game winning streak. I don't think that will bother them against Seattle as they go for the hat trick. People always say it's really hard to beat a team three times. No, it really isn't. If you've won the first two times,
there's a reason. It's not.
If you've won the first two, you probably should win the third one because you beat them two times. Okay. Yeah. But here's where it gets really interesting. The Niners, as we said, are the 13th team in the Super Bowl era to enter with a 10-game winning streak or more. How many of the previous 12 do you think went on to win the Super Bowl?
Two.
Let's go. I just want to go in a completely different direction. Let's go eight. I don't know, man.
Three. Oh, only three. Wow. That's a win. Three teams that entered the postseason, the Super Bowl era, on a 10-game or more winning streak actually won the damn thing. So, you know, there are five really good teams, I believe, in the postseason this year. The Eagles and the Niners, and then the top three in the AFC that we've talked about all year. The Bills, the Bengals, and the Chiefs. It would not surprise me if any of them won it. But, you know, there's not really outside of, like, you know, the Dolphins without Tua finding a way to get to a title game.
Way into the championship.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I don't think there's going to be anything that could be considered a massive upset, you know, in this postseason, because we have so many good teams.
The 49ers Seahawks matchup. I'm not a huge Brock Purdy believer. I think that there are just some significant weaknesses that are impossible to overcome. The Seahawks are the wrong team to expose Brock Purdy, and there's
correct.
Two reasons.
Good point.
One is that they are a team that just loves giving up yards after the catch. They're addicted to it. They're great at stopping passes in the air. They're great against the deep ball. Tariq Woolen has been fantastic this year, but they're not good at tackling receivers. Now with Jordan Brooks out, they're going to be even worse at tackling receivers, especially if you're targeting somebody like Christian McCaffrey. Styles make fights, and I think that this is a bad matchup. On the other side of it, I think that the Seahawks, they're dependent on the deep passing game. They don't throw more often deep than other teams, but they are dependent on it more. They get most of their value out of those deep passes to Metcalf and Lockett. And who's the best deep passing defense in the league? It's the 49ers. And Geno Smith doesn't like throwing deep against the 49ers. He's only thrown twice deep against them over those two games. One of them was a pick. I just don't see this happening for the Seahawks.
I'm getting scolded by my producer to move us forward here. But I love those stats there. They all play. And look, and like I said, my betting model has this as the biggest point gap, you know, score gap favoring the 49ers of any game this weekend. So that goes. Also, it has the 49ers winning the Super Bowl. Okay, Arif, thank you for joining us, my friend. We will catch up with you next week as we move forward into the divisional round. And I won't have a beard still. So great.
All right. See you then.
See you then. By the way, that segment is brought to you by our good friends, my good friends, and Trey. I would hope they're your good friends over at Caesars Sportsbook.
Absolutely. You know they are.
It is important that y'all place your first wager. Okay. If you're getting into sports betting, this is the time. NFL playoffs is the best time to do it. Do it with Caesars Sportsbook. Go place your first bets there, because here's what happens. If it's your first bet at Caesars and you lose, you're going to get 100% of your bet back. It'll be given back.
How much of that bet do you get back? How much?
It's 100%, Trey. 100.
The hell you say?
Yeah, I would never lie to you. And guess what? It's not just 100% of your bet. You can bet up to $1,250 and get every single penny of that back if you lose on that first bet. And win or lose, you're also going to get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits that you can use at any Caesars location throughout the entire world. And that is only available at Caesars. Redeem this offer now using promo code PFNCZR. That's in the comments on all of the platforms this is streaming on. It's promo code PFNCZR. It'll get activated as soon as you make your first deposit. So make sure you do that now. If you follow me on Pickett, you'll see I only use Caesar Sportsbook to place my bets for the NFL. And Trey Wingo, of course, he's the chief trends officer for Caesar Sportsbook. So he knows a thing or two, as they say around the league. Okay, Trey, let's finish up here.
Real quick, we just got a couple of other nuggets in for you for people to understand. Real quickly, Bengals, Ravens. Yeah, if Lamar doesn't play, and by the way, let's not pretend like there are things outside of the injury that are factoring into this for Lamar Jackson.
100%.
Okay. There are business decisions being made here. And I have no, you know, I don't have no qualms about Lamar choosing this path. They chose not to give him a contract that was of value. You know, and they can say they did this and that, but like, why, if you're Lamar Jackson, why are you settling for that much less guaranteed money than what the Cleveland Browns gave to Deshaun Watson? So anyway, Joe Burrow has been on an amazing roll. The Bengals go into this with 8 straight wins. That matches a franchise record. The Ravens are just limping on offense. In the last 5 games, they averaged 13 points per game. They've lost 3 of them. So there's a great disparity there. But I want to get into this one nugget real quick for people about the Cowboys and the Bucks. The Cowboys and the Bucks played week 1 of the season in Dallas.
Well, hold on. Time out. Because guess what?
Yeah.
Our super.
That's on me. That's on me. I thought we were moving on to questions. I apologize. Let's do our super smash of.
That's all right. We turned it into a tease there. That was actually good. So what's the nugget? Talk to us. What's going on here?
Okay. So, you know, the cynic in me says, hey, the Cowboys season started playing the Bucs and it's going to end playing the Bucs. But that's not sort of what I was making here. So these two teams started the season, right? They played in Dallas.
Yeah.
And the Bucks won that game 19-3 as a 2.5-point favorite on the road. They're a 2.5 point underdog at home in the postseason. And I'm trying to figure out why. Like, why are the Bucks a 2.5 point underdog playing a home game against the Dallas Cowboys? Do you know the last time the Dallas Cowboys won a road playoff game? You want to take a guess?
Oh, man. Been a minute. 19. It's been,
what'd you say?
1998.
You're in the right decade, but back it up a bit.
Jesus, I thought I was being generous. Longer than that?
Back it up.
1995.
Back it up.
Come on. 1992.
Boom. They have lost 8 straight road playoff games. Their last road playoff win was the NFC Championship game in San Francisco when they beat the 49ers 30-20 and really set in motion the dynastic Dallas Cowboys of the 90s that went on to win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. That, by the way, is tied with 4 other teams for the longest road playoff streak in the history of the NFL. And they looked awful Sunday against the Washington Commanders in a game where they had everything on the line, Brett. They had everything on the line. When they took the field, the NFC East was still in play. The idea of the Cowboys having home field advantage was still in play. Now, it would have taken the Giants without their starters beating the Eagles, but stranger things have happened, and they could not have looked worse. But what was most interesting about the Cowboys is the conditions in which they played. They played on the road, outdoors, on grass. Go look at the Cowboys' record this year on the road, outdoors, on grass. They lose in Philadelphia. They lost in Jacksonville. They lost to the Washington Commanders. They won the game against Tennessee on a Thursday when Joshua Dobbs was making the first start of his NFL career. The Cowboys on grass, on the road, are not good. Yeah. They're not good. And I'm still trying to figure out why they're a 2.5 point favorite in this game.
And you mentioned one of those losses coming in Jacksonville. So it's not a temperature thing because they're going to be in Tampa. It's going to be relatively
What I think it is, first of all, their defense is built on speed.
Yeah.
Their defense is built on speed. Okay. It's like, you remember when USC had Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and they went up to Notre Dame to play the Bush push game. You remember that 2005? Okay. Yeah. Notre Dame grew their grass like this long in that game, specifically to try and slow down Lendell White and, the other Mike Williams, that was a total bust as a wide receiver, and Matt Leinart and all those guys.
Number 2, they wanted to take the Lions that year.
Exactly. Well, when they took a wide receiver in the first round 3 straight years. Hashtag GMs don't do that. That's a problem for the Cowboys. Their defense is built on speed. Their offense isn't. Like, their offense is more about, the running game and all that kind of stuff. But the dynamic defense of the Dallas Cowboys is built on their ability to get places fast. And they are not good in those situations on the road, on grass, outdoors. So I'm really curious to see what happens. And, of course, we're talking about Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady – he's done well in the postseason is the best way to put it up. He's done well in the postseason. So just keep that in mind. Yeah. Keep that in mind as you watch this game and you see the Cowboys struggling. They're terrible in the playoffs on the road. And this season specifically, they're not good on the road, outdoors, on grass.
Yeah. Well, it should tell you something that I, believe that the 49ers game is going to be the biggest point differential. And this is a game involving a team with a losing record in the postseason and a team that has one of the more explosive offenses in the NFL. And that's not the biggest point differential. And it is a lot to do with what you're saying. Look, I'll be honest with you, Trey. I think the Buccaneers are a bad football team.
They are a bad football team.
I think they are a bad football team.
They have Tom Brady. Like, and whatever the best of the Bucs is what they're playing right now. Right.
Yeah.
They're playing better ever since the pounding by San Francisco. They've gotten better and they found a way to play better. So the Cowboys come in limping after a terrible performance week 18 against Washington. And historically, they have a lot of issues. And this season, they've had a lot of issues playing on this surface. And I don't know why you have confidence in the Cowboys based on everything we know about this team. I mean, they thought a quarterback draw as time ran out in against the Niners last year was a good play.
Yeah. Well, look, everything we saw in week 18 is why no one ever trusts the Cowboys. So we'll see how that goes in the wild card. And we're coming up on 9 o'clock, Trey. And that means, unfortunately, we're going to have to get out of here. We will be back next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our last segment brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you download that app for free and use promo code PFN. That'll get you a potential $100 bonus, among other things. Go do that now. Trey, I'll see you next week, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Aloha. It means hello.
Mahalo, my friend.